Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing the mental health of young Australians and what can be done to change the health system for the better. My special guest is Professor Pat McGorry, who wrote recently on this topic in the Medical Journal of Australia with his colleagues. You can read their perspective by clicking the link in the description of this podcast. Professor Pat McGorry is a psychiatrist, the executive director of Origin, a not-for-profit youth mental health organisation, and the professor of youth mental health at the University of Melbourne. He was named Australian of the Year in 2010, and he was also a founding board member of Headspace. Professor Pat McGorry, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sam. Great to have the opportunity to talk.
Professor McGorry, let me start by asking you about your recent perspective in the MJA. You talk about the current state of youth mental health. How would you describe the current state of youth mental health in Australia?
Well, without being alarmist in any way, I think we have to call it a public health crisis. We have seen a 50% rise in prevalence of mental ill health in young people since 2007. It's a reflection of a worldwide trend, and we have the best data actually because we did a very rigorous national mental health survey in 2021, the first one for 15 years, and it showed this dramatic rise, which began well before the pandemic and got accelerated during the pandemic. But back in 2007, 26% of teenagers and young adults, late adolescent, early adult, were diagnosable with a mental disorder. So that's one in four in a given year. And that had risen to 39%, or almost two in five young people by 2020-2021. And the rise in young women was even more marked. 48% of them met the criteria for a mental disorder at that time. Now, it might have come back a little bit since the pandemic settled down. We don't have any, you know, more recent data than 2021, but this trend around the world has led the US Surgeon General, for example, to describe it as a youth mental health crisis. And he's been touring the US trying to raise a response to this crisis. And of course, when you see a rise of that magnitude over such a short space of time, your mind has to turn to prevention. You have to ask the question, why is this happening to young people? And the causes or the drivers of it must be socioeconomic and sociocultural changes in society. And that's what we really don't really have our heads around yet, just yet.
And one of the things you talk about in your perspective piece is social media and these mega trends that are affecting young people, particularly young women. Can you tell me about what kind of potential threat to mental health you see in that space?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the popular culprits, you know, if you want to put it that way, amongst pundits, amongst, the public and amongst politicians, I guess. And there may well be some truth to it. Jean Twenge, the US academic, has mapped trends in mental ill health in the US, and they do map very closely onto the rise of the smartphone and the rise of unregulated social media. So I think we can all imagine and relate to how that might be harmful to young people, whether it's taking them into a slightly unreal world where expectations are sort of much greater, there's more pressure. There's obviously cyberbullying to consider. I think social media is a dangerous place, you know, for all of us in some respects, although there are some benefits to it too. So, but it's very simplistic to just pin this rise in mental ill health on just one variable, one trend like that, even though it's quite dramatic. I'm much more impressed actually than by analysing the economic climate and the kind of climate's good, actually a good word, because climate change is another variable that's really affecting young people. But the economic climate around young people has been deteriorating for decades, with casualisation of the workforce, with escalating hex fees, housing prices, rental prices, you know, getting out of control. The wealth transfer, which the ANZ Bank, I think, mapped to something like 10 or 15% transferred from younger generations like Gen Z, Gen Y to, you know, baby boomers over the last 10 or 15 years in particular. Overall, it's having quite corrosive effects, I think, on their optimism for the future, their sense of security.
So, Professor McGorry, let me ask you about the structural issues with the health system that you've identified in your piece. You've said that Headspace continues to be cost-effective, it improves access and safety, but you've called for a rethink of the funding model for Headspace away from a bulk billing style system.
Obviously, prevention is better than cure, but until we can actually have effective strategies to tackle these mega trends and stabilize the situation, we've really got to have a system that looks after the mental health care of these young people in such huge numbers. And even though we were kind of prescient, I think, in Australia 20 years ago in formulating a new sort of health system model for this age group, the teenagers and young adults, and putting them together instead of lumping them with children or older adults, we've actually created a space. Headspace is the vanguard of that, but I think in Victoria we also have the public mental health system restructuring around this age group too. So, and we've actually influenced the rest of the world. Probably about a dozen countries have gone down this track now, building these sort of youth-friendly systems of care, particularly at the primary care level. So the entry into healthcare is safe and welcoming for young people. So that's been a great contribution, I think. But trouble is, I think 17 years down the track, the model needs a major reimagining and a refinancing because it's completely overwhelmed at the moment. And obviously, GPs beyond Headspace have got a huge role to play here, working alongside youth mental health care systems as well. But primary care is in deep trouble, as we know, with the decline of bulk billing and the financial plight of general practice generally. And that's had a similar effect on Headspace, which is a bulk billing, whether it's allied health or GPs. It's a bulk billing agency, and it's got very minimal block grant support, only 1 million per site in block grants. The adult mental health hubs, for example, receive nearly 4 million per site. So Headspace is really underdone financially, and therefore it can't compete for the workforces that are needed. So it's got completely overwhelmed, I think, with this rising demand and really struggling, sadly. Despite, I was working yesterday in Coffs Harbour Headspace, I saw 9 young people yesterday who really need this sort of service. But for every one that gets in, there's another 5 or 6 that don't make it. That wasn't the case a few years ago.
And you've written in your piece in the MJA about how jurisdictions split mental health care between child and adolescent mental health and adult mental health, and you argue that that's an outdated model.
Headspace was the vanguard of showing how that model could be transcended. I think we originally used to say that the system's weakest where it needs to be strongest in the mental health across the lifespan, because all the kind of force of morbidity and even mortality, is in this age group. We lose tremendous productivity and the sort of mental wealth of society through neglecting this. So a pediatric adult model works sort of okay for physical health conditions, although it's not ideal for many of those too. But when you look at the timing and the life cycle of mental illness, to not have a strong teenage young adult system without a break in culture and capacity at 18, that's disastrous. And so that's one of the things that Australia has actually had the foresight to begin developing, but it's only very partially implemented. Victoria is the only state that's making the change to move the boundary to 25 to align with Headspace. Other states are still very complacent and status quo orientated at the state government level. So there's no real congruence between the state and federal systems in most states and territories still.
And let's talk about the NDIS, the National Disability Insurance Scheme. You've written in your piece that while mental health can lead to disablement, the NDIS does not integrate well with the systems. The Australian government's announced a review of the NDIS. Do you welcome that review? And what can be changed in that space?
Well, I definitely welcome the review, and I've spoken to Bruce Bonahady and to Lisa Paul about the situation. I think they both agree it's very perverse. It's the same perversity that I just described in acute health, where you have to wait until you're in a life-threatening or disabled state to get access to general health care for mental illnesses. But it's the same thing happening in the NDIS. You have to prove that you have almost an intractable lifelong condition before you're allowed to get access for a mental illness. And this locks out most young people. Only 3% of packages are available for teenagers and young adults. And yet this is the group that have the most risk of disability, and they're the greatest group that contribute to later disability further down the track. So what the NDIS model currently offers is, well, you just got to wait until that actually happens before you get any support. So it's completely perverse and the opposite of cost effectiveness. It's the most cost ineffective approach to mental illness you can possibly conceive. So that has to change. And that means that we have to be able to allow more temporary, you know, briefer, maybe a year or two of support to prevent that disability occurring in the first place. And it has to be a combination of health funding and social services to the NDIS funding. And then singled agencies like Origin or like Headspace can access both sets of sources of funding and deliver both psychosocial and clinical and medical type care under the same roof. And that's incredibly effective when that's possible to deliver.
And let me ask you about better integration at a government level. Rather than having split ministries of social services and of health and split departments, what are the structural problems you see?
You mentioned integration there. The other structural problem with the way health systems have been operating since 2016 is that we've created a system with primary health networks where their main impact has been to fragment mental health care even further than it was in prior to the PHNs being set up, because the commissioning of mental health services has been devolved to these regional bodies, which are outside the regulatory framework. They're outside the real regulation or control of the health department. And the PHNs use competitive tendering for the relatively meager resources that are devoted to mental health. They're fragmented further by being shared around competing tenders in local areas. We need integration of mental health care in single agencies, multiple funding sources, so the patients actually get this a one-stop shop where they get all of their needs met, whether they're health or social, under the same roof.
A last question for you. If we zoom out a bit, I'll take you back to 2010. You were named Australian of the Year. Quite an honour. And have you been able to use this title and, I guess, the platform it gave you to advocate for system reform?
It was a huge privilege and a very fortunate thing, not just personally, but I think for mental health and for youth mental health, because I was able to do exactly that. And I think one of the reasons I was lucky enough to get that award was because I had already been doing those things before. I'd actually been trying to, using my scientific and clinical, you know, knowledge and with other like-minded colleagues, formulating reform-minded approaches to these issues. And then we got a huge opportunity to take that further and to basically have the chance to offer solutions to government more strongly. And government responded quite well, I think. You know, so that's why Australia was ahead of the curve in these areas: early intervention for psychosis, youth mental health. These reforms have been emulated all around the world, but they've stalled. You know, that they've hit a bit of a brick wall. They're sort of no longer fit for purpose. They need a redesign and a reinvention, as I've been saying. So I think I've been very fortunate, and as a result of that, I've been able to form relationships on both sides of politics with people who have supported these approaches. So if you look at the recent book by Sir David Haslam called Side Effects on, you know, the unsustainability of healthcare across the world, we've got to look much more carefully about where and how we spend the available resources. There are things that are really not logical or cost effective, but they're funded on emotional grounds. Those sort of decisions mean that other decisions are not made, and other groups of people miss out very severely, which harms the society and reduces life expectancy. And mental illness is one of those great examples. Another positive of the new government is that they have a well-being budget, and they're starting to factor in mental health and well-being as one of the things that has to be measured in terms of outcomes. And that's going to tap into this idea of mental wealth, social capital. And we're sacrificing a large proportion of the emerging generations of young people who we need to be healthy and productive. And if we don't look after their main health problem, which is mental illness and mental health, which is deteriorating sharply, then we're going to suffer, all of us.
Professor Pat McGorry, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sam.
My special guest has been Professor Pat McGorry, who wrote recently on this topic in the MJA. You can read the perspective by him and his colleagues by clicking the link in the description of this podcast. Professor Pat McGorry is a psychiatrist, the executive director of Origin, a not-for-profit youth mental health organisation, and the professor of youth mental health at the University of Melbourne. You can find more podcasts on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for joining me.